Don't touch that dial. Stay a while and listen to the great things that God is doing in the world today. Come fly with Global Air Force.
And my spirit left my body, what people call near-death experience or out-of-body experience, but I was down and watched from above the accident scene. And, you know, all that really does is prove that what the Bible tells us is true, that we spirit living inside of our body, and die, that spirit's going to leave. It's either going to go to heaven or it's going to go to hell.
Now, here's your host, Jim Rohn.
Thank you for tuning into Global Air Force. My friend, do you know that God, your creator, talks to you in real ways all the time? And now the problem is, do we know how to hear his voice? Today, I have a young man that has heard and experienced God's voice and care in many ways. He is author Bruce Vanatta. Bruce has written a poignant account of God's care and of God's communication with him in his book, Saved by Angels. He says, God is talking. Are you listening? Bruce wants to share with you today how God talks to everyday people. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Where are you at?
I'm in the middle of Wisconsin, in the address of Rudolph, Wisconsin.
Rudolph, Wisconsin. That's farm country?
Yes, it is.
I'm so glad to have you today. What's on your heart?
Well, I think the title, Saved by Angels, that whole aspect of the book and how the book came to be and how I'm even in ministry now. The fact, in November of 2006, I was working on a Peterbilt logging truck.
Mm.
And it was it was the third day, three-day job. I just finished up working a 12-hour day. I was wiping my tools off, putting them away in my service truck. I traveled around the state of Wisconsin working on heavy equipment. And this particular day, I was in an area we call the Lakes area.
Mm-hmm.
Just wiping my tools away, putting them in my truck. I had done a cylinder head and head gasket repair on a Cat engine in this Peterbilt logging truck. I was running the engine to make sure I didn't have any coolant leaks, and the driver of the truck, I had been working with him for those 3 days on that truck, and he said that he had a oil leak somewhere that if I could diagnose it, maybe he could fix it himself, because he changed oil and did different things on the truck himself.
Mm-hmm.
So he just said, before you leave, I was just getting ready to walk out, and he said, before you leave, could you just diagnose that leak for me? And so his creeper, a little tool that mechanics use to lay on to roll underneath vehicles, his creeper was there. And
was that a concrete floor you were on?
Yeah, concrete floor in a truck garage. And his light, his little trouble light was there. And I told him, well, when I slip underneath here and check this leak, you jump up inside and shut the engine off, because the engine was still running from me testing my repairs that I just finished. There was some other stuff that the man was working on the truck. He had removed one of the front wheels and some other things, and he was going to finish up that stuff the next day, because this was the end of a work day here. So as I slipped underneath, he crawled up in, and he had removed, if you can imagine, for those people that aren't familiar with a big truck, really big Class 8 semi-tractor that you see out on the road.
Oh, yeah.
If you were to look underneath, yeah, big one. Look underneath one of those, you would see that the lowest thing hanging down is what they call the front axle. It's a dropped axle. All that means is that when it comes out of the center of the wheels on each side, your front two wheels that steer there, it drops down and it goes low to the ground, and it's one solid I-beam axle.
Yeah, piece of steel.
Yeah, and there's about 10,000, 12,000 pounds of weight on just those two front wheels alone.
Wow.
So one of those wheels had been removed by the man, and he had put a bottle jack underneath the axle to hold it up so that he could remove the wheel. And so when I crawled underneath the truck on his creeper there, I was parallel with the center line of the truck, and I put my feet towards the back. I slipped underneath that big chrome bumper, and I'm sure many people have seen one of those chrome bumpers in the rearview mirror of their car going down the road or something. But
oh, yeah, they look big.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they're right behind you like that. So I slipped underneath that bumper feet first and was in right in the middle of the truck, and that dropped axle was going across the midsection of my body, just a few inches above my body. He crawls in the truck. The truck rocks, and it was just enough movement to make that jack come out from underneath the truck. Now, he had not used jack stands or any blocking of any type.
Oh, my.
So there was no safety mechanism to stop the truck from falling. And the truck, that front axle, that 10,000, 12,000 pounds of weight that's on that axle, came down and crushed me against the cement like a blunt guillotine. Now, this axle's a little bit rounded. But when it came down and it just across the midsection, that axle's maybe, oh, let's say, at least 6 inches wide. So it was a 6-inch wide strip across my midsection, running not quite perpendicular, but just a little bit off. It was a little bit, it clipped, the bottom side of my left ribs, and then went at an angle down towards my right hip. So it was going at an angle across that way.
Wow.
Just 6-inch wide stretch. And so when it fell, the first thing I did was just out of reaction, I tried to grab it and like bench press this 10,000 pounds off my body. You know, but my superhuman powers weren't working that day, so it didn't move. And the next thing I did was I just called out a crisis 911 prayer, and I said, Lord, help me. I remember I said it twice. I looked, and the axle was on the cement on the passenger side.
Oh, my.
And it was coming up at an angle across my body towards the driver's side because the driver's side wheel was still on. But the angle was not as much as some people might think because it's a dropped axle, and because this truck had what they call low pro wheels. It just means that they had a smaller diameter. It was a pretty gradual angle. So when I looked on my left side of my body, there was less than an inch of airspace between the bottom of the axle and the cement, my body. So I knew that my body was less than an inch thick on the left side.
Oh, my.
And when I looked on the right side, there was maybe 2 inches of space between the axle and the cement. So I knew that the thickest part of my body going across my midsection was maybe 2 inches thick. So blood started to come out of my mouth. I mean, I knew this was bad. It incredible pain. I had incredible pain. The guy jumped out of the truck. He ended up jacking the truck up off of me, got the truck off my body. And at that point, I was begging him to get me out from underneath the truck.
Oh.
I was afraid because the way he had jacked it up, he couldn't find any good place to jack the truck up off my body because the jack would not fit underneath the axle anymore because the axle was on the cement. So the only place he had to jack it up was on a leaf spring, a curved leaf spring. So if you can imagine that the square top of the edge of a jack on a curved leaf spring was only touching on one side, and I'm looking at it, and I'm expecting that jack to fly off from underneath the truck again.
Mm.
So I was begging him to get me off from underneath the truck, but he knew that I had to have a broken back, and I did. I had 2 broken vertebrae in my back, the width of the axle. And so he didn't want to touch me. Everybody's been told that if you move somebody, if they've got a broken back, they could be paralyzed. So he wouldn't get me off from underneath the truck. So I just reached back. That chrome bumper was behind my head. I'm completely underneath the truck, and the chrome bumper is behind my head. And I looked down, and I could see that my midsection, I look like a cartoon character with a big, you know, sometimes a Roadrunner will drop something on Wile E. Coyote, and Wile E. Coyote looks flat like a pancake.
Yeah.
That's the way my midsection looked.
I
reached back. And just out of fear from having that truck follow me again, I grabbed the bottom of that bumper with both hands, and I tried to pull myself out from underneath the truck. And I got myself as far as getting my head out from underneath the front bumper, and that's as far as I could move myself. I moved myself maybe a foot or, you know, a foot and a half or something. Just enough to get my head out from underneath the truck. At that point, I went unconscious, and my spirit left my body. What people call near-death experience or out-of-body experience, probably more commonly known as.
Mm-hmm.
My spirit went up into the ceiling of the garage, and I, from that vantage point, I was able to look down and watch from above the accident scene. And, you know, all that really does is prove that what the Bible tells us is true, that we have a spirit living inside of our body, and
yes,
when we die, that spirit's going to leave. It's either going to go to heaven or it's going to go to hell. So.
Yes, that proves that. Yes, sir.
So I was just watching down from above. It was a total sense of peace. There was no pain anymore. There was no more fear anymore, nothing like that whatsoever. Just a complete sense of peace and serenity. I watched down from above, looked like I was watching a movie. In fact, this might sound strange to some people, but I was so disconnected from the situation that I quite honestly didn't realize that the guy laying under the truck was me.
Oh, my.
It was almost as if I was watching, you know, it was like watching a movie with other characters, other players, and I wasn't one of them. I was just watching. And I could listen, I could hear the man that I've been working with. Now, I've known this man since I was like 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he was crying. He's running his fingers through my hair. He's on his knees above me. Now, if you can picture, this was a conventional, a long-nosed Peterbilt. Now, the hood is shut at this point. My head is sticking off from underneath the front bumper, just my head. He's running his fingers through my hair, on his knees above me, crying, apologizing, saying that it was all his fault. He's sorry. He should be the one that's dead, not me. That's the kind of stuff I'm listening to him say. Now, again, I'm just watching from above with just a sense of peace and not really not bothering me at all as to what I'm hearing or what I'm seeing. Mm. Just watching intently. But the title of the book, Saved by Angels, here's where that comes into play. When I called out, Lord, help me, he sent two angels. Now, I didn't get to see the angels until my spirit left my body and I was watching from above. But there it is. That's the most exciting thing I saw from above. As I'm looking down, on each side of my body, on each side of this man also, there was an angel. These two angels, one on each side. And if you can just picture the front of this big truck with this big chrome bumper, one angel was on one side of my body, on the driver's side, and the other angel was on the other side. They had their arms, I could only see up to their elbows, because they had their arms underneath the truck, and they had their arms underneath the truck angled in towards my body. So you could just tell by their body English, the way they were turned, that they had their arms angled in towards me. Now, the man I was working with, he's probably 6'1", 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
And he's on his knees. Now, these angels are on their knees on each side of him, but their heads stuck up at least a couple feet taller than his.
Wow.
So these angels, if they would have been standing up, they would have had to have been at least like 8 feet tall. They did not have wings.
Mm.
They were in robes. They were wearing a robe. They were huge, humongous body as far as shape. Their shoulders were very broad. They were very muscular. The robe was kind of tight, form-fitting.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of had a wedge-shaped body with a very broad shoulders, and it narrowed down to a narrow waist. But their arms and their shoulders, everything was very muscular. You could see the muscles ripple through the fabric of the robe. Even the robe, a detail that I could see from the distance I was at in the ceiling looking down, the robes were woven out of material that I've never seen before. It looked to be like miniature rope. Like if you could imagine a rope a little bit smaller than maybe like the rope size of a pencil or a pen.
Mm-hmm.
Very small rope like that. That's what the robes were made out of, was these ropes woven together in this simple crossweave pattern.
Mm.
It didn't look like it would be very comfortable, but it looked very tough, very durable. Mm-hmm. I joke sometimes and say they must have been special forces angels, like it was a bulletproof rope or something. There was a light, just a glow emanating off of both of the angels. They were matching bookends on each side, left and right.
Both looked the same. Identical.
Yeah. Mm. They looked identical. They had long hair. Very long hair. Now, I'm from my vantage point, the ceiling, I'm looking down at the front of this truck, and they are on their knees facing the front of the truck, so all I could see was their back.
Okay.
I'm looking at their back, if you can picture that. I'm looking at the back of the man that I've been working with. He's on his knees. I can see my head sticking out from underneath the bumper on his, just to his right side, just over his right shoulder I'm looking.
Mm.
And just my head is sticking out. I could tell that my eyes were closed. My head was turned towards the driver's side. Now, these angels, their arms underneath there, they're steady as statues. They did not move. They were just steady as statues. And again, there was just this sense of power and peace and this light, this glow emanating. I couldn't see their faces, but it was obvious they were men just by the shape of their body. Even though they had long hair, it was obvious that they were men. In fact, I often joke and tease people and say, if you've got anything against long-haired men, long-haired guys, hippies, whatever term you want to use, you're going to be surprised when you get to heaven, because I saw some long-haired gentlemen that got...
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's the title of the book, and that's why. So as I'm looking down, they're obviously ministering to my body. I began to watch the emergency personnel arrive. Later, I was able to, when I went and spoke to that fire department, I told them how many people were there. I told them that two of the people came through the wrong door. Because instead of coming through the front door, I watched them come through the back door, which was the second driveway, and is the only reason why. The last two people that got there, they missed the first driveway and took the second driveway.
Oh,
I wouldn't have been able to see that from underneath the truck.
Mm-hmm.
But from my vantage point in the ceiling, I could see it. I even told them what some of they were wearing for coats and different details.
Oh, my, the details. Oh,
yep,
my.
Details. Mm-hmm. Yep, from above it. The one thing was surprising to me. When I went and spoke to them, I pointed this one person. I said, you had a bright red coat on. This was in November here in Wisconsin. That means snow and a lot of cold. So they had, their winter coats on. And And the person said, yes, I was wearing a coat, but it wasn't bright red. And so they had the coat there, and they went and got it, and they showed it to me. And I was kind of surprised because as I looked from above, that coat seemed really bright red. And then I told them about the board that they stuck underneath me. Mm-hmm. And I said that thing was like bright canary yellow. And they said, well, the board that they stuck underneath me was light color, but it wasn't a canary yellow. And they went and got it, and it was more of a beige.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman, the two people that came last, the last two people that got there, the people walking through the wrong door, the back door, I said, you know, that she had like a bright red hair, but her hair was a dark red hair. I realize now, after looking at the stuff, I've got those pictures just burned in my memory, in my mind, looking at them back through my human eyes again here, the colors were much brighter.
You were more sensitive to the spectra while you were in that state, uh-huh?
Exactly. And also, the other thing that was interesting, I can recall there was 10 emergency people that ended up showing up all together. And I was able to listen to all their conversations that they were having simultaneously.
All at once.
They were at this garage at the same time and understand what they're saying. So what that proves to me is that, you know, like you said, more sensitive to the light and
mm-hmm.
the color.
And sound.
But also more perceptive to what even you're hearing. And because there's no way I could have done that in the physical. So all that does is proves is that this body, this flesh that we're in, is holding our spirit back. Our spirit is actually much more fine-tuned than what our flesh is.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was just watching, I'll listen to the conversation. I was listening to two guys saying that I was dead, that it didn't matter what they did. I was already dead. And I was listening to just the different conversations people were having. Now, when these last two people walked in, the woman, the red-haired woman, her name is Shannon. I know her. I've met her now. But she got down on her knees. Now she is between those angels, and she moved the guy I've been working with, Leonard, out of the way. And she got down there, and she turned to him and said, what's his name? And he says, Bruce Vanatta. So she starts slapping me in the face down there, just gently slapping me in the face and saying, Bruce Vanatta, open your eyes. Bruce Vanatta, open your eyes. And I could listen as I'm watching from above. Her voice got louder, louder, louder. And the next thing I knew, just like that, my spirit zoomed down, and I was back inside my body looking at her eye to eye. The first thing that hit me was the incredible pain, because up in the ceiling, again, I had no pain. It was just peace. The second thing that hit me was a big, oh, crap, I'm the guy that's laying underneath the truck. And I started to piece it together, and I remembered, oh, that's right, the truck fell on top of me. I remembered the truck falling. I remembered him jacking the truck back off, me pulling myself out. I pieced that all together in my mind, and I also knew that I'd just been up in the ceiling. So at the point of me realizing I've been watching from above for the last, you know, I'm not sure, 20, 30, maybe 40 minutes even. I'm not even sure how long I was up there, because there was no sense of time in the ceiling. I'm not sure. But but anyway, realizing that my spirit was out of my body, I began to get really scared, because I was thinking, you know, I must be on the point of life and death here.
Mm-hmm.
So I started getting scared, and she was comforting me, and it was interesting, because I would shut my eyes and the pain would instantly go away. As soon as I would shut my eyes, the pain would instantly go away and my spirit would leave my body again. I was not going up in the ceiling. I didn't have any sense that I was going up or down. I just knew that my spirit was leaving at a fast rate of speed. She'd slap me, you know, tap my face, I'd open my eyes, the pain would come back. She'd say, look, I need you to, you got to keep your eyes open. You got to keep your eyes open.
That's a lesson, isn't it?
Well,
how that works.
Yeah, here's the interesting thing. Everybody has seen a cartoon, and this cartoon I'm referencing, a little red devil on one shoulder and a little angel on the other shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible tells us that is an accurate picture of the unseen spiritual realm around us. There are angels and there are demons. And let's say the little red guy represents the devil and all his cohorts, his demons, and the angel represents God and the Holy Spirit and his angels. And as I was laying there, this pretty loud, you know, I don't want to have anybody think I'm crazy or anything, but there was a pretty loud voice or thought, if you will, in my head, and it said, just shut your eyes, give up, and die. You're going to go to heaven anyway, just shut your eyes, give up, and die. And when I would shut my eyes, as I said, the pain would go away, but I would she'd slap me in the face, tap my face, I'd open my eyes again, and this other voice was in my head. Now, this was quieter, more of a whisper, and it said, if you want to live, you're going to have to fight, and it's going to be a hard fight. Now, see, we know from the Bible the devil always promotes death.
Yes, you're
God
right.
God always promotes life. Mm-hmm. But God doesn't lie to us. He doesn't say, once you become a Christian, all your problems are going to go away and life's going to be a bowl full of cherries.
No.
He said clearly, if you want to live, you're going to have to fight, and it's going to be a hard fight. See, the Lord knew it was going to be 5 operations. He knew it was going to be a year in and out of the hospital. He foresaw all the physical therapy and everything else. He knew exactly what was going on. So it was interesting. He was giving me the choice. If you want to live, you're going to have to fight. Mm. So I chose, yeah, that I wanted to live for my wife and my kids, and that's what I thought of.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued to fight it out and keep my eyes open, and that's the long and short of the accident.
She asked you what you got to live for. Did she ask you that?
Yes, she did. Mm-hmm. She did, and that's where I instantly thought of my wife Lori and my 4 small young children at that point.
Oh,
so that's what pieced that together.
In your book, you are so honest. But you were already writing a book, and you were so honest. You were talking about your drug addiction, and
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You started the book before this fell on you, right?
Yes, I did.
And what inspired you to even write the book?
Well, again, as I said, I was a mechanic. I didn't want to write a book any more than the man on the moon. And the Lord, after 20 years of drug addiction, drug and alcohol addiction, pornography, I mean, you name it, I was into all kinds of stuff. God rescued me after years and years of me trying on my own and not being able to kick the habits or to live the way I knew I should be living.
Mm-hmm.
God reached in and he saved me from all those things. And once he did, which was, let's say, approximately roughly a year before the accident, once he did, my life so dramatically changed that I wanted to share that freedom that I've been yearning for and that sense of peace that I've been yearning for years. It was such a life-transforming kind of thing that I just wanted to be able to share it with people. And so the Lord began to put on my heart that he wanted me to write a book about all things that happened in my life, starting way back from a child of being molested at 5 years old and how God was always there helping, even despite my bad choices, despite my bad decisions. You know, and that's the best part about my story. And every time I go and minister, because that's what I do now full-time as minister, I go and share my story and I tell people, look, if God would send angels to save my life, it proves that God would send angels to save anybody's life, because I'm the last person in the world that could deserve it or did deserve it. It's just pure mercy, grace, undeserved love for a sinner, for sinful people. That's who I am, and you know that's who I was, and yet God reached in into this world, into the flesh, and saved me by sending his angels. So that's the big part of the message. But as far as the book goes, he was telling me, look, begin to share with people the things that have happened throughout your life, the ways, mm-hmm. different ways that I've spoken to you. And so it was just out of obedience. It wasn't anything I wanted to do, but out of obedience, I began to do this. Yeah. Every
mm-hmm.
night after I come home from work, I'd spend an hour or two with my family. The kids would go to bed, and then I would stay up till like midnight, you know, every night, just typing away on the computer in this book. And so actually when the accident happened, I had finished the rough draft of the manuscript of a book with a working title, God Talks to Everyday People, Are You Listening? And that's why the title of the book that is published, the one that's been published already, is Saved by Angels, because I've added the accent to it.
Mm-hmm.
It all fit together like a hand in glove, as you saw, but Saved by Angels in the subtitle, to share how God talks to everyday people.
That is wonderful, Bruce. What a story. What a miracle. Today, Bruce Vanatta shared with us from his book an experience of how he was saved by angels. And he's written a book, Saved by Angels, and you can easily find the book on the net. Bruce's website is Sweetbread Ministries, Sweetbread Ministries. And Bruce has also authored another book. It's called A Miraculous Life, and it's true stories of supernatural encounters with God. If you contact Bruce, don't forget to mention that you heard about him on our radio program.
Global Air Force wants you. Be a part of the Global Air Force Radio Ministry. Please go to our website at www.globalairforce.net. That's www.globalairforce.net.
If the Apostle Peter, the disciple of Jesus, would have sung a song after the death and resurrection of Jesus. I believe this is how it would go.
The gates and doors were barred, and all the windows fastened down. I spent the night in sleeplessness and rose at every sound, half in hopeless sorrow and half in fear the day would find the soldiers breaking through to drag us all away. And just before the sunrise, I heard something at the wall. The gate began to rattle and the voice began to call. Hurried to the window and looked down into the street, expecting swords and torches and the sound of soldiers' feet. There was no one there but Mary, so I went down to let her in. And John stood there beside me as she told us where she'd been. She said they've moved him in the night, and none of us knows where. The stone's been rolled away, and now his body isn't there. We both ran toward the garden, then John ran on ahead. We found the stone and the empty tomb, just the way that Mary said. But the winding sheet they wrapped him in was just an empty shell. How or where they'd taken him was more than I could tell. Well, something strange had happened there, but just what, I did not know. John believed a miracle, but I just turned to go. Circumstance and speculation couldn't lift me very high, 'cause I'd seen them crucify him, then I saw him die. Back inside the house again, the guilt and anguish came. Everything I'd promised him just added to my shame. When at last it came to choices, I denied I knew his name. And even if he was alive, it wouldn't be. But suddenly the air was filled with strange and sweet perfume. Light that came from everywhere drove shadows from the room. Jesus stood before me with his arms held open wide, and I fell down on my knees and just clung to him and cried. He raised me to my feet, and as I looked into his eyes, love was shining out from him like sunlight from the skies. Guilt in my confusion disappeared in sweet release, and every fear I'd ever had just melted into peace.
So, until we meet again, God bless you.